Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Peter Beach. He's a partner and the director of the tax practice for Sheehan Finney. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you we're going to be talking about, you know, everybody's favorite topic under the planet, and that's taxes. We're going to be talking about, of course, the tax changes that happened that are affecting HR. I guess the biggest thing is, could you kind of give an overview of this tax cuts and job back before we get into all the details? Kind of give me just an overview of it and why this is such a big deal for HR professionals and corporations.
Yeah, I mean, the reason it's such a big deal for corporations is that the overall tax rate dropped to a from a graduated rate that went up as high as, or graduated scale that went up as high as 35%, down to a flat rate, meaning it applies from $1 to whatever, at 21%. And when the when Congress does that to a tax rate, it drops it dramatically. It's usually a trade-off with some deductions that had been put in place because the rate had been higher before, and that always attracts lobbyists helping out companies saying, well, look, we can make your rate lower if we convince Congress to give you a deduction for this or that or the other thing. And so what happens when rates drop, this happened back in 1986 also with that Tax Reform Act, when the rates drop, they tend to also take away some of the deductions because it'd be like double dipping to keep all the deductions and drop the rate. And a lot of those deductions affect human resource management because they have an impact on the way the company is incentivized to provide benefits to employees. And that's really sort of the driving force in what we're going to be looking at this morning that has affected human resource management through the Tax Act.
All right, so, you know, we're looking at this tax change, and you talk about the trade-off between, obviously, deductions and, you know, a lower tax rate. Is it safe to say that this is a benefit to most companies versus a penalty to most companies?
It certainly is for corporations. For pass-throughs like partnerships and S-corporations, yes, it's a benefit, but not to the same degree. There's a fairly complex provision that we'll be talking about a little bit later gives a deduction for certain qualified income from pass-through entities. That it's complicated, and it can provide a benefit, but there are lots of situations in which it doesn't. And I think it's pretty well accepted that corporations really made out big time in tax reform, and that everybody else got something, but not nearly as much as the corporations did.
So, talking about just from a general perspective, do you find that companies who are pass-throughs are now considering becoming corporations to take advantage of this? Because there was this whole, many years ago, this push to not become a C-Corp, right, and to go back to being an S-Corp. And now, is there a shift to start thinking about doing it the opposite way?
Yes and no. I think very early on.
Now you're sounding like an attorney.
I've been playing that role for many years.
Yeah, I was going to say. That's an attorney. Yes. And no. Okay, Peter. Thank you. Thank you for that answer. We appreciate it very much here.
Well, it certainly does apply here, actually, because early on, that was a big discussion. was, wow, 21% rate for corporations. Should I jump in there and take advantage of it? And the reality is that that is a 21% rate on profits, net profits of the company. So if you're a smaller pass-through entity and you say, oh, I want to take advantage of that 21% rate, I'm going to convert. But you, once you become a corporation, you'll be taking most of the money out, either as salary or as dividends. You don't leave anything in to be taxed at 21%. Your salary is going to be taxed at 37% top rate. And yes, if you do pay dividends, it's going to be at the capital gain rate. But it's not a slam dunk, as people were thinking, oh, yeah, 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 let's switch. Let's become a corporation. There are lots of factors that go into it. Plus, if you said, oh, I'm just going to hold a bunch of cash in the company, I'll pay my tax at 21%, hold the cash there, and I'll use it later for something else. You do that, and okay, you only paid the 21% tax. You don't have to pay the other taxes because you're not taking it out. But there are other rules that have been in place for years that have an impact on keeping money in a corporation just for that reason, you know, to avoid. There's a tax called the accumulated earnings tax, which says if you don't keep it in there for working capital purposes or specific projects that you've identified in the minutes of the corporation, that you can wind up paying tax as though you had distributed the money, even though you hadn't. So I think there's been a kind of a second look at the idea of becoming a C corporation just because the rate is low. And I would advise anybody who's thinking about that to think hard about it if they're a smaller company.
No, I think that's great advice. Again, we're talking with Peter Beach. He is a partner and the director of tax practice for Sheehan Finney, who is a great sponsor of the HR Power Hour, I might add, and I thank you, gentlemen, for that. You know, one of the things that we specifically look at and has already gone into effect, as we're here in the beginning of March, is that individuals have seen changes to their payroll tax withholdings, and they're getting more money in their day-to-day tax bills for the most part. What is some of the things that HR professionals should make sure they went back and double-checked? What are some of the things that companies should be looking at when it comes to the payroll tax withholding to make sure that they've, A, done it right, two, that they're not missing anything and that they're prepared for the full tax year, and so that we're making sure that everything is the way it should be?
Okay. Well, first of all, the 2018 withholding tables came out in January, but by February 15th, everybody was supposed to have switched from the 2017 to 2018. Just because those tables came out in January doesn't mean that it was easy to instantaneously change. But everybody should be on using the 2018 tables now, and also the supplemental wage withholding, that's wages in excess of your regular salary, basically. The rate there dropped to 22%, and that should be taken into account also. Now, there's another part of this, too, which is not just that the tables have been changed, but that the form W-4, which is the form that employees typically fill out early on in their employment history and then don't think about for quite a while unless there's some significant change in their life that would affect how much money should be withheld. Because that W-4 form has now been revised, they should go back and redo their form W-4 because they may have looked at their 2017 W-4 and tried to make changes there. But unfortunately, there were at least two worksheets in there that still, for example, one that kept the elimination of that ignored the elimination of personal exemptions, and another that ignored the doubling the standard deduction, which would have a dramatic effect on whether you really came up with the right number of withholding allowances on your form W-4. So, the one thing that's important here for human resources management is that it's not the resource manager's job to help the employees their form W-4. In fact, it's kind of dangerous to get into that territory because then the employee can say, you told me to do this and that was wrong. The IRS is going to come out with an educational program, should be out by now as we're talking about this. And the calculator that's available online at irs.gov/W4app, is available. And employees should definitely be encouraged to go and use that calculator and try to figure out whether they do need to change their form W-4 or not. And it could be, for most people, it's going to be that they'll be, if they don't do it, they may wind up over withholding. And while that's great, you get a money back at tax time, it's not efficient.
Yeah, it's not the best use of your money, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
And we're talking with Peter Beach, partner and director of tax practice for Sheehan Finney. You know, are there any other tips for payroll withholding? Do companies need to adjust anything for the employer side of the tax table?
Not really. You know, the IRS took everything into account when it changed the withholding table, but there's a bit of a disconnect, as we said earlier, with the Form W-4 for 2017. And I think the important thing is to make sure your employees know that they still may need to redo their W-4, that it's not just up to the IRS to change the tables and then everything's fine.
How about for W-9s or, you know, 1099 employees or contractors or any on that side? I know that doesn't necessarily apply from the payroll perspective, but does this change anything for contract employees?
No, not directly. There has been some talk about how individuals might want to become independent contractors to allow them to take advantage of the pass-through for the deduction for pass-through income, which we were talking about earlier. That's a bit of an overstatement because it's not, you don't become an independent contractor by just saying, I'm an independent contractor now. You've got to satisfy, I'm sure this discussion has come up.
It has, many times. It has, yeah.
Yeah.
It's why it made me laugh. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to be an independent contractor. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, there's a lot there to think through from the IRS perspective, the Department of Labor perspective, workers' compensation. There are different rules. I'm sure you've been through that at other times. So there are no changes here directly, but that kind of planning has been proposed, and you really need to look closely at that, because once you get into that area of thinking you can just become an independent contractor, it can take you down a dark path with the IRS.
No, I think that's a very good, it's what we would say, wise advice. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo. We're talking with Peter Beach, partner, director of tax practice for Sheehan Finney. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, general manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, we're having a wonderful conversation about the Tax Cuts and Job Act with Peter Beach, partner and director of the Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney. You know, Peter, you would never know we're professional here at times. Sometimes on the HR Power Hour, we have way too much fun on this show. I'm telling you, we do. We do. We just have way too much fun. You know, because taxes are fun. That's why we're here. We're talking about fun taxes. Just having some fun with you. All right, look, you know, one of the things that you mentioned off the air, which I think is very important for the listeners to hear, is the fact that when you Google about these tax changes, you can get misinformation.
Yeah, you can. There's a lot of misinformation out there in two different ways. One is that you really need to check the date of the posting that you're reading, because the stuff stays up on the internet for a long, long time. And there are posts up there that reflected the new tax law as it was evolving through the House and then the Senate. And lots of things changed by the time it got to the conference committee and into its final form. And if you're not careful, you can be reading information that is just flat wrong. Now, it's also taken, on some of the websites that are up to speed, you know, for example, a law firm or an accounting firm's website, there's even some difference of opinion on some of the issues that have come up around tax reform. Remember, this was rushed through. In 1986, tax reform took 2 years to gel. Here, it was just like on a fast train, and there are a lot of issues that are coming up at the professional level. So you can read an older post from a CPA firm or a law firm and then read a more recent post from another firm and see some differences. And I'll point those out as we're going through here. There's one I have in mind in particular. But you need to be careful. Just check what you're reading and make sure it's current.
Well, as always, you should check with a professional that you trust and information that you definitely trust. And that's always the case. I think when you're talking about taxes, you just don't want to screw this up. I mean, that's the fact. You want to make sure you take the time to get this information right. And in fact, you have a full year before you're going to actually file. So we want to make sure that we have some time to put this in place, which is why we're talking about today. So one of the areas that there is a federal tax credit for paid family and medical leave. Talk about that a little.
Sure. The law has been around, the Paid Family and Medical Leave Act, for quite a while, but there's never been a credit to encourage companies to set up a program that not only gives people time off, but pays them. Now, in some states, there is mandatory law for actually paying employees something when they're in paid family or medical leave. But many states have no law like that. Some companies do it, but they do the family and medical leave, but they don't pay anything for it. The credit is to encourage companies to start doing it, and it's a fairly technical type of credit. There are requirements that you have to satisfy to be able for the company to be able to get the credit. So the company gets the credit, the employee gets the pay, and this is only available for 2018 and 2019 right now. In fact, some people are calling this the short-term federal tax credit for paid family and medical leave. So the requirements are where you can get stuck. You've got to have a policy that says you're going to provide at least 2 weeks' leave, and during that time you're going to pay the employees no less than 50% of their regular wages. Now, when you do that, you're going to get, if you do the 50% of regular wages, you're going to get a 12.5% credit, the employer is. That's the tax credit for the minimum amount of payment of regular wages. You can go up as high as, obviously, continuing the employee's wages completely. And if you do that, the credit will go up as high as 25%. And it goes up gradually for every in increments from of 1% from the 50% to the 100%. The other thing is that the other requirement is that this is for only for employees who have worked for you for a year already, and they earned $72,000 or less in 2017. And it's also for part-time employees. And in that case, they also have to have worked for at least a year, but the leave has to be can be on a prorated basis. And the other thing is the credit. Is, you see, this is one of those kinds of tax laws that's got all these pieces to it to be able to really make it work. There are two other things. One is that it's only for wages paid for up to 12 weeks. Okay, so you could give someone more time off than 12 weeks, but you're only going to get the credit for the 12 weeks. And the other thing is that if this is already mandated by a state or local government, or provided directly by the state or local government, you can't take that payment into account for the credit.
Yeah, no, there's nothing complicated with that at all. That's pretty darn simple, if you ask me.
I know, and you know, it's hard to listen to this kind of thing, but it's the way the tax law is structured. And when I work with a company, it's not just sort of blabbering about this stuff. You've got the list of requirements in front of you. And, for example, with an HR person, I'd be talking about, or manager, I'd be talking about, okay, you need a policy, and these are the things that you have to state in the policy for two reasons. Your employees have to know what the ground rules are, and you need to know that you're satisfying the law to be able to get the credit.
Oh, and both are very important in making sure that they understand and can communicate properly.
Right.
So the other thing that you mentioned specifically in the first segment was the elimination of deductions, and that there were some eliminations of deductions. One of the ones I know about is the employer-provided fringe benefits. Let's talk about that a little to break that down to make sure that people understand exactly what we're talking about.
Okay. Part of the tax code's usefulness is in encouraging encouraging employers to do certain things that Congress has decided are good for the world, for employees and for employers. It's a nudge to get them, the companies, to do something. And they do that frequently through providing a deduction. So where Congress thinks, you know, for example, we want to promote mass transit, people going to work on mass transit, and we want to help the people who don't take mass transit to be able to park close to where they work. So there have been these deductions allowed for the employer and exclusions from income for the employee for certain amounts paid for to reimburse them for transportation and parking. That deduction is gone. And one thing that people are kind of up in arms about is what's going to happen. Are employers going to take that benefit away? And most of the thinking at this point that I'm hearing both from companies and other tax lawyers is that this is a valuable benefit that goes beyond the tax effect, the tax benefit to the companies. So two things are going on. The companies, many companies are going to want to keep it in place because their employees like it, they want it, and they'll be upset if it gets taken away. So it will probably stay in most cases. And the other thing is that, and one of the reasons they'll be upset, is the corporate rate dropped to 21%. So it's not like the deduction was just taken away and the rate stays where it was. So companies will be taking that into account. And even if they do take it away, and this is one of those cases where the thing I'm about to describe is a case where some practitioners understand this and some haven't quite gotten there yet, is that you read on some websites that, well, the employee can just do this on a pre-tax basis under a pre-tax transportation expense plan. They can pay for it themselves, but have their salary reduced for it so they don't pay tax on that portion of their salary. So some people just say on their websites, you can do that. You can do it pre-tax. Others have looked more closely at the law, and they see that there's some funny language involving the use of the word expense. that makes it so that even the pre-tax benefit might be gone. And we won't know where that's going to stand until the IRS provides clearly where it's going to stand, until the IRS provides some guidance on it. So that's where you could go on one professional website and get one answer, yes, you can do the pre-tax, or go on another one and say, well, you better be careful because we're not sure you can do it.
When do we expect the answers to that?
Who knows? Right? We just don't know. That would be a matter of the IRS categorizing the importance of the guidance that it needs to put out, and that, you know, spreads across all sorts of guidance that they offer, ranging from a notice to a revenue ruling or a revenue procedure, which is more formal, to a change in the regulations. And as you get more formal, the whole process takes longer. So I think what most practitioners are expecting is that there'll be more announcements than usual as the IRS settles on what it wants the clarification to be, but hasn't been able to take the time yet to go through the reg-making process or the revenue ruling writing process. But in terms of, you know, are we going to see that this spring, this summer, this fall?
It's hard to know at this point. How about deductions for moving? That's always a big one for companies.
This one's gone, basically. They took this one away in every possible respect. The employer doesn't get a deduction anymore if it had paid job-related moving expenses. The exclusion from the employee's taxable income of that benefit is gone. And employees used to be able to, if they paid it themselves, take a deduction. And they can't do that anymore either.
Wow. That is a big difference.
It is a big difference, and employers here need to think about whether they should continue to offer the program, even though they're not getting a deduction, and their employees will be taxed on paying them the benefit. And if they're going to do that, they've got to analyze, well, how are we going to do that? Because right now, the federal law has rules about, you know, the distance that you have to move to qualify for it, and the time frame within which you have been working before you move to take advantage of the deduction. And what employers need to do, if they're going to keep something in place, is say, okay, do I want to modify those rules or just keep them? Maybe you keep them because that's what employees are familiar with, and they'll feel comfortable and pretty good about you. Maybe you modify them, but if you cut them back, you're going to get grumping. If you expand them, you may get a boost. A lot of this is about employees' perceptions of their employer trying to help out.
No, you're exactly right. Any other deductions that we need to know about when it comes to, you know, these types?
Fringe benefits. Biking probably hasn't been as important as to employees as transportation and parking, but to the people who do it, it's extremely important. And essentially, that the deduction, which used to be that you could get reimbursed for $20 per month of your biking expenses, is gone. And employees cannot choose to do the pre-tax income route here. In other words, they couldn't say, okay, I'm going to reimburse myself by reducing my salary by the biking costs. So it's basically gone, and the question is, do employers want to keep it in place? The deduction's gone, but do the employers want to keep it in place? And then on-site gyms, which is, I don't know, is that an elite perk?
No, there's actually a lot of small companies that have that, especially tech companies, right? A lot of tech companies have those type of it. On-site gyms and on-site what I would call beer fridges. Right? We're seeing a lot of those popping up here in the tech world.
Yeah, and those, well, the on-site gyms are, the employer deduction's gone, and if the employer decided to keep it, the employees can still exclude the benefit from taxable income.
No, that's great. Well, we're talking with Peter Beach. He's a partner and director of the Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB. We'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well,
All you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're having a great conversation with Peter Beach, partner and director of the tax practice group for Sheehan Finney. We're talking about tax cuts and the Job Act, significant changes affecting human resource management and just businesses in general. Peter, we've been talking about a number of things having to do with elimination of deduction for fringe benefits, which we talked about at the end of the last segment. Employee achievement awards. Let's talk about some specifics here. We're going to go down kind of a laundry list of different things. Let's look at, first of all, how about achievement awards for employees?
All that's really happened here is the definition of what kind of property you can give and have the employee get the employer get a deduction and the employee have to pay no income has been put in writing. Basically, it's been clarified. That's all that's happened. And generally, the limit has been and still is $400 for any one employee, $1,600 if you've got a qualified plan award, and it's just a clarification of the law.
Okay. Great. Let's talk about business deductions for entertainment, amusement, and recreation.
Yeah, this one's kind of complicated if you really dig into the weeds about what used to be allowed and what is allowed now. And basically, what's happening is that the employers are no longer going to be able to take a deduction for entertainment expenses like golf, sporting events, galas. They're just not going to be deductible anymore. There will still be deductions for meals at 50%, and that's been around for a while now. One interesting thing has come out of this between the idea that meals are deductible and entertainment isn't, is that employers are not going to be able to take it for granted anymore that business-related meals are subject to the 50% disallowance, because if they're entertainment more than just meals, they're going to be subject to 100% disallowance of
the deduction. So let's break that down a little bit, if I could. So you take a client on a golf outing, and part of that golf outing is lunch. It's part of the package that the golf course put in place.
Right.
How does that work?
We're going to find out as time goes by, and employers are going to apply whatever sensible rules they think are important, but it's going to come down to what was the purpose? Was it simply to entertain? And if it was, an aggressive position from the IRS perspective is going to be, sorry, no meal deduction, because entertainment was the reason that you did this. The lunch was secondary. How that's going to pan out in different businesses, it's hard to tell.
So from a business development standpoint, or with a client that you're trying to develop a relationship with, that could be either way.
Yes. Yep. There's more of an argument there that it's going to be a business-related meal, I think, if you can say, well, look, yeah, I took one guy golfing, and I was just trying to get his business, as opposed to the golf event. You know, where you're inviting lots and lots of your clients and everybody's schmoozing and just having a good time.
You know, just from a quick other point to this, how about for nonprofits that hold big charity events and different things? Does any of that affect this?
No, they're non-taxable to begin with.
Okay, just want to make sure, because gosh knows, You never know. So I just thought I'd ask the question. But the business that sends somebody and gives a deduction, I guess that's still under the deductible side from a charity gift, correct?
Yes. In fact, the deductibility percentage for the individuals has gone from 50% gifts to a public charity from 50% to 60% of their income each year. There's a cap on how much you can deduct. You can give as much as you want, but you can only deduct in any particular year up to 60% of your income of gifts that you made. It used to be 50%.
So this would encourage organizations to partner with nonprofits. I should say for-profit organizations to partner with nonprofits to create events.
Yes and no. That there's a this goes kind of outside.
There
of
you go with that attorney now. Thing again. There you go.
Yeah. I know. Yes and no. But this is a good one too. There are all kinds of most states now have laws that have an impact on the partnering between tax exempts and taxable organizations, with an eye to making sure that when you do that, the taxable entity, which is saying we're partnering with these guys, you know, for example, the first dollar that you spend on our product goes to this charitable organization, there are rules in place to make sure that's actually happening. And there's registration requirements and reporting requirements. So anyway, that's an aside.
Sure,
comes
that
up
makes
out
sense.
Of the question
I get
asked.
It. Peter, now that we're talking about nonprofits, are they subject to disallowance of deductions?
They can be. Now, when you think about a nonprofit, you'd say, well, wait a minute, they're not taxable. They don't care about deductions. And in fact, they do in two ways. The first one is the way in which they might be competitive with a for-profit, and that's basically what Congress was trying to get at this time around when they said, hey, if you guys have any transportation fringe, parking facility, athletic facility on site, basically the types of fringe benefits that the deductions were disallowed for, they said, you have to include those amounts as unrelated business taxable income. So they were kind of saying, look, we have to equalize this in some way, and we can't take away your deduction, so we're going to make you include it in income. And then they did something else, which kind of puts a cap on this kind of arrangement, why they did it this way. They said, but if you do have unrelated business taxable income and these amounts are directly connected with that, then the deduction's disallowed, and that's the way they do it, because your unrelated business taxable income would have been, that's taxable, so there they can treat you just the same way they do any profit-making entity.
All right, how about payments made in settlement of disputes involving the employer-employee relationship?
Well, the big one is the sexual harassment claims, so that any settlement or payment that's related to sexual harassment or sexual abuse and the attorney's fees related to that are not deductible if the settlement is subject to a non-disclosure agreement. And the other one is governmental investigations. It's always been the fact that if you had to pay a fine from a governmental action against you, you could not deduct the penalty or the fine. Now it's that reaches into, and think EEOC claims here. If the government comes in with a potential violation and you wind up having to go through the investigation process, those costs are not going to be deductible. There's some exclusions, but it's kind of a deep reach.
No, I understand. And by the way, we're talking with Peter Beach. He is the partner and director of the Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking about tax changes affecting HR. Let's talk about qualified equity grants.
Yeah, this one's a kind of benefit where when you first hear about it, you think, wow. And then when you hear the details, you go, oh. So the wow is that employees can be awarded compensatory stock options or restricted stock units. And normally when those are vested, you have to pay tax. And what you're going to be able to do now is for 5 years, you're going to be able to avoid paying that tax. You're going to be able to say, okay, I got my restricted stock through my restricted stock units, but I don't have to pay tax on the receipt of those units for 5 more years rather than right away. So that's the wow. I can wait 5 years, and it won't be subject to the nasty 409A rules about deferred compensation, which we can't discuss right now, but they are nasty. Now, here's the, oh, really? You have to have a written plan under which at least 80% of all U.S. employees are granted qualified stock. That's pretty rare. Usually these kinds of things are awarded in rifle shot kind of ways. There are limitations on who you can award them to. Bigger companies, yes, they may have a program like this that covers lots of employees. In other cases, it might not be 80%, and then you're not going to be able to take advantage of it.
Let's talk about, because we were talking about tax-exempt organizations, how about new excise tax on these tax-exempt organizational compensation issues?
Yeah, this is, it's going to affect some, but not all, because the excise tax is going to be on compensation in excess of $1 million. And yeah, there are charities that pay more than $1 million to their 5 highest paid employees, for example, but not that many.
Yeah, it's pretty limited in scope.
Yeah, right? I mean, the consequence is, okay, if you do that, we're going to make you pay an excise tax, which is basically 21%. Which is basically like saying you're going to, on the excess, pay a tax as though you were not tax exempt.
Got it.
Because the 21% rate, 21% rate is the one that applies to profit-making corporations.
HR professionals are certainly going to ask, will there be any effect to the Affordable Care Act?
Yes and no.
You're consistent with your answer.
I know, it's awful. The individual mandate, the penalty for not having health insurance is gone. The employer mandate, and some people just heard, oh, the mandate is gone. Well, yeah, the individual mandate's gone, but the employer mandate is still in place. And that's, you know, if you've got 50 or more full-time employees, you have to offer health coverage to 95% of full-time employees. That's still there. Who knows what's going to happen in the future, but right now, individual mandate's gone, employer mandate's still in place.
How about deduction for local lobbying expenses?
This is kind of a tiny one, too, and be a big deal to some organizations, but the deduction has been around for a long time, the disallowance of the deduction, but it was for high-level lobbying, state house lobbying, federal lobbying, helping candidates running for office. This reaches down deeper and says, now, if you're going to go to your local government and lobby, that's also going to be disallowed. And it hasn't been. I think I saw a figure that said that the government thought this was going to bring in $800 million. Now, that's surprising to me, but I wasn't previously aware of how much money might have been spent on local government lobbying.
Well, it certainly has gotten bigger, I guess, over the years from a lobbying.
Well, especially with the Indian tribal government, which is included
sure.
in local. Right?
Well, that makes sense, yes.
The gambling
yes.
stuff. That,
yes.
that may be where the number comes
yeah,
from.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. We do see quite a bit of that across the country right now.
Right.
We're talking with Peter Beach. He's a partner and director of the Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Flagg, General Manager of the Body Architect Fitness Center in Portland, Maine. I want to personally invite you to come meet us. If you've been considering joining a gym but haven't yet because you're a little nervous or just plain old don't like the gym, come see us. We have created a 30-day personal training experience just for you. Meet our trainers, try a few workouts, and use our facility for 30 days for just $79. Call 774-2196 or visit thebodyarchitect.com today.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking about tax changes affecting HR. We're talking with the one, the only, Peter Beach. He's a partner and director of the Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney, who's an awesome sponsor of the HR Power Hour. And today, Peter, you have provided some really good information. As we head into the last segment here, there's two more areas I think that are important for listeners to be really aware of. You've talked a little bit about this, but I think it's really important. And this is this pass-through entity issue.
It's complicated. The deduction, it is, again, one of these things where the Congress said, okay, here's the deduction where you have 25% deduction for qualified business income. Well, there's a definition of qualified business income. There's a limitation on the deduction that's applied based on W-2 wages of the company and capital assets of the company and whether they provide specified services like accounting, law, consulting, medical. It goes on and on with the limitations. And the reason it's discussed here in the context of human relations really is that as companies start thinking about entity structure and whether how to optimize whether they're going to stay a corporation or become a corporation or become a pass-through entity, it's just important to evaluate the impact on compensation and benefit programs and fresh opportunities that may emerge. And the point there is it's not all tied up in this new tax law. It's laws that have been around for a while that limit fringe benefits for partners in partnerships that are available to corporations. So there needs to be some broader thinking around whether to use the pass-through benefit or not.
So the last one that we're going to talk about today, and I really appreciate being on the show today because I think you've provided great information for the HR professional as well as business leaders, is provisions impacting mobility programs.
Yeah, this is larger companies and some smaller companies that are heavily involved in foreign markets, both with employees that they might wind up sending out into foreign markets or from foreign markets into the U.S. They do this thing in mobility programs where they try to equalize the tax effect of the person working in the U.S. versus coming from overseas to work in the U.S. All of the changes that have taken place involving tax rates, reduction in the AMT, getting rid of the standard deduction, repeal of the personal exemption, those kinds of things are going to have an impact on how you calculate what tax-equalized assignment looks like. Plus, the moving expense is gone. Our company's going to still provide that. That's a big deal when it's going overseas rather than just across the state, for example. And it can get complicated.
Well, that's why they have you, Peter. That's
right.
Why people can call you at Sheehan Finney. And I think that, you know, certainly if we recap today, I asked you this very simple question. What one thing should a employer or HR professional do right away today when they're thinking about structuring, when they're thinking about making sure they're doing the right thing when it comes to taxes this year? What do you think that is and is the big takeaway from today?
I'm going to tell you two, and they're both really short, so I'm sitting the time.
Go ahead.
One, make sure your employees relook at their W-4s. Let me put it this way. Make sure you encourage them to do it. Don't say, hey, you have to do this, but encourage them to look at the W-4 and see if that should be adjusted. And the other is help your CEOs and CFOs think through what programs to keep, even though the deduction's gone, because that goes beyond tax. That's a matter of employer-employee relations, and as HR professionals know, it's a big deal.
No, it is a big deal, and people need to make sure they're not making irrational decisions just based upon tax structure. Taxes, as you know, is a piece of the puzzle. But in this era of trying to retain great talent, you have to think past that. You have to think about what it is that is your value proposition as an organization. And so, Peter, I want to thank you very much today. Certainly everybody can go to HRPowerHour.com after the show. They can download this information. They can get the information, how to reach Peter directly. He's a great contact and a great wealth of knowledge regarding certainly the tax changes that are happening that are affecting HR. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Beth Smith from Veral Dana. Every employer strives to ensure a safe, injury-free work environment, but it's not always possible to avoid accidents and injury on the job. Today, I'm going to present the first of a two-part series to help you build your team to avoid costly work-related accidents. The best way to avoid a costly claim is to adopt the team approach and then train your team to work as effectively as possible in the event of an injury. First, employees must know the policies in place for accident reporting, prompt treatment, and accommodation should there be temporary limitations that impair their ability to perform their regular job duties. Employees should know that the company expects them to play an active role in their own recovery, from strictly abiding by any medical limitations in any accommodated work to regularly informing human resources as the recovery process evolves. Regular training to reinforce both employee knowledge and company expectations will pay off in reduced lost time cases. For more information, please feel free to contact a member of the Veral Dana Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, Peter Beach, partner and director of Tax Practice Group for Sheehan Finney, discusses tax changes affecting human resources. Peter and your host, David Chulo, will be talking about the new tax bill and how it has changes to payroll tax withholdings, federal tax credits for paid family and medical leave, elimination of deductions, changes in business deductions, and tax implications to the Affordable Care Act and more. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.